Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from Vassar Brothers Medical Center, the only hospital between Yonkers and Canada offering Makoplasty, the newest robotic surgical system for hip replacement and partial knee resurfacing. health-quest.org/VBMCortho.
Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us in the studio today for Medical Monday is Dr. Paul Husson. He's a board-certified urologist who comes to us from Nathan Litauer Hospital and Nursing Home in Gloversville. Dr. Husson specializes in some cutting-edge procedures like laparoscopic kidney surgery and Botox bladder injections, as well as a treatment of a host of urological issues like kidney stones, urinary tract infections, incontinence, and screenings for urologic cancers. According to the American Urological Association, 30 million individuals live with urological issues in the U.S., greatly affecting their quality of life and overall lifespan. Dr. Husson earned his medical degree at Albany Medical College, completed his residency at Albany Medical Center. He's a member of the American Urologic Association. Dr. Husson, welcome to Medical Monday.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you here. Make sure you're talking right into that microphone. That's right. Or you're going to bring it to you a little bit.
Okay.
The question is, bladder injections, what's that about?
Right. So bladder injections, it refers to using Botox, you know, commonly known for wrinkles and you know, muscle dysfunction, to treat refractory or hard to treat bladder incontinence or urge incontinence.
Okay. And is this something new or has this been around for a while?
Well, it's recently gotten more attention as it was approved from the FDA for urge incontinence. Prior to this, it was used in patients that had neurologic disorders or what's called a neurogenic bladder. So it's been used for quite some time, but it's getting more use and attention now.
When I read the very good introduction that Jessica Blaustein Marshall prepared for me about you, I was taken aback when I saw urological issues in the U.S. greatly affecting their quality of life. That I get, and overall lifespan. Really? Mm-hmm. Lifespan?
Right, exactly. So, I mean, children, young adults, again, everyone can experience difficulties with bladder function, with kidney stones, or any other urologic disorders. As it may be thought to be more of a problem of people that are older, that's not the case.
Are we making any progress with kidney stones?
I believe so. Again, that the metabolic evaluation for kidney stones, doing 24-hour urine tests and getting an idea of exactly what each individual patient, what their urine looks like, is helping us as urologists come with more specific recommendations to help prevent stones in the future. Sure.
Yeah, but there was a time I remember that you had kidney stones. They used to send you down to White Plains or something. Now, are we capable of doing more around here now?
Oh, absolutely. So it's I'm smiling because, again, it's one of the stories that I get from my teachers would be that, you know, kidney stones used to be an open procedure, big incision, long recovery times. And with the advances in endoscopic or using small cameras, that kind of procedure, we can pretty much treat any size stone with very minimal invasiveness. I mean, no incision at all, really.
Your colleague, Dr. Shen, who I love, mm-hmm. out at Nathan Litauer, has made tremendous advancements with all kinds of fancy stuff, robots, and is that happening in urology too?
Well, absolutely. So, I mean, in general, I mean, the word robot is used to describe advanced, you know, computer assistance, things like that.
Sure.
And, you know, as that technology gets better, the tools that we can use are improving as well. So, again, robotics is huge. And when you talk about robotics and urology, you are mostly talking about the Da Vinci system used for larger surgeries like prostatectomies, partial nephrectomies, and things like that.
Prostatectomies, I understand.
Right.
What was the next one?
Nephrectomy, I'm sorry. So if you have a small kidney mass, you can just cut out that portion. So before, you used to have the entire kidney would be removed.
Oh.
Now with minimal invasiveness, you can get just the diseased portion of the kidney removed.
And is that done with arms other than your own?
Right, exactly. So the surgeon will sit at a console and control the laparoscopic device while it's in the patient. Yeah, pretty amazing.
These are expensive, are they?
Well, I guess it depends on what your definition of expensive is, but...
$5 million, is that expensive?
Yeah, I would say so, sure. but again, even though, again, there is controversy in the urologic community as well as in the medical community at large as to whether or not the greater expense is justified when you're talking about the metrics of what makes a procedure better. So there's still conversation and controversy about that.
Do the younger guys tend to be more progressive than the older guys who learned a different way?
I don't want to get myself...
Far be it from you to say that.
Well, right? Exactly. I don't want to get myself in any trouble. But as far as the... I can just say I can speak for myself and that using the machine is very intuitive. It's very easy to use. Again, with the magnification and removal of certain tremor, et cetera, other kind of boring details. But
tremor meaning somebody who has tremor.
Well, again, so some people have more than others. But, I mean, when you get down to microscopic very, very fine movements, I mean, most people will have it some degree, whether that's
really?
You know, large or small. But with this, that gets evened out.
Wow. Okay, let's go to Barbara in Wappingers Falls. Okay, Barbara, your turn. You're on, Barbara.
I'm 72 years old, and about a year ago, I've had the dropping of the mucosa lining, the vaginal mucosa lining,
okay,
with a somewhat diminished urine flow,
mm-hmm.
And I wondered in terms of prognosis and treatment.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling in, Barbara.
Just this is your first time, Paul, I just
right.
want you to explain. When somebody uses a condition, we like to explain what the condition is, okay, and
sure.
then so that we all understand it, and then you go ahead.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that you're referring to basically what's called prolapse. So your bladder has kind of fallen into the vagina, and it is slowing down your flow of urine. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know if it's the bladder. What was described by my gynecologist was that it's the mucosa lining.
Okay. Well, so again, and just to explain it for everyone listening as well, when you're talking about pelvic organ prolapse in women, the vagina is surrounded by three separate areas, right? So in the front is the bladder, and towards the top is going to be the uterus, or if the uterus is removed, the apex, and in the back is the rectum. Any one or all of them can, if there's a weakening of the connective tissue or weakening of the muscles there, that can all come into the vagina and basically be where it shouldn't. And other issues can happen when that does happen. It's hard to say exactly without myself having done the exam, but I think that most likely you're having probably the bladder or maybe some other portion falling down. Is it causing you any pain?
No, no pain.
Well, that's good. Have you had any issues with urinary tract infections or anything like that?
No, never.
Well, that's great. Very good. As far as prognosis, again, it's really going to depend on the degree, meaning how much prolapse there is. If it's a minor or just small amount, you may live just fine with having that. Of course, if that develops and gets more serious, you can have issues with poor bladder emptying and then infections and pain. Hopefully not, of course, for you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Barbara,
you're
thank you
welcome.
For calling. Appreciate it.
Very
interesting. 1-800-348-2551. I want to give everybody a chance, and now's your best chance. Don't be yelling at me later if you didn't get in. 1-800-348-2551. Jim in Matamoros. Welcome back, Jim. You're on.
Okay, my question's more or less along the same lines there. It said that urine is supposed to be sterile, but something like a cystocele cause an ascending infection to, say, the kidneys?
Right. So Jim, urine, is supposed to be sterile in that there shouldn't be any large amount of bacteria that would cause an infection. But if you have, certain things that will impede emptying, so if you have enlarged prostate or you have a prolapse and you're not emptying your bladder 100%, that residual urine bacteria can live there and thrive. And if it gets bad enough, it can be ascending in that it gets to the kidneys or elsewhere. It starts with poor bladder emptying in general. Sure. You're
thanks,
welcome.
Jim. Appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And we go to Gary in Schenectady. You're on, Gary.
Thank you, doctors, both for taking my call. My question is this. If one has an enlarged prostate, does sexual activity of any degree either exacerbate or ameliorate the condition at all?
Okay. Well, thanks for the question, Gary. It's interesting because when people talk about enlarged prostate, that means different things for different people. But, I can speak for myself as a urologist. Enlarged prostate will mean two different things as far as going forward. So there's the enlarged prostate that we screen for prostate cancer, and that's, you know, done with the rectal exam and getting a blood test called the PSA test. And then there's an enlarged prostate that can cause obstruction of urine flow, and that can cause, you know, the issues with that, of
Is
course.
That prostatitis?
Well, prostatitis is an infection of the prostate, which could be secondary to having it enlarged.
I see.
But not necessarily together. Now, the question is, as far as sexual activity, there are people that talk about, you know, having regular ejaculations, reducing the possibility of obstruction of the fluid that the prostate makes. And again, the prostate makes about 15 to 20% of the fluid that is present in the ejaculation. Now, that being said, I'm not very familiar with any very rigorous scientific studies that would say that you need to do this or you're going to end up with this disease or dysfunction. I don't know if that quite answered your question, Gary, but as far as having an enlarged prostate, having more intercourse or more ejaculations, wouldn't necessarily make it smaller, no.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Gary. 1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a short break. I mean short. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Middletown Medical's Pediatric Express, walk-in urgent care for children in Chester with a pediatrician available weeknights until 9 p.m. MiddletownMedical.com. Capital Roots, formerly Capital District Community Gardens, announcing their new home at the Urban Grow Center. Grow, educate, provide, CapitalRoots.org. The Empire State Plaza Performing Arts Center, presenting the 2015 dance series featuring Tango Buenos Aires, as well as the Ellen Sinopoli, Bill T. Jones, Arnie Zane, and Ragamala dance companies at The Egg in Albany, theegg.org. 10,000 Villages in Stuyvesant Plaza, Albany, featuring fairly traded home decor and gifts handcrafted by artisans around the world. 10,000villages.com for additional store locations. And Vertex Sales and Design in the A&P Plaza, Pleasant Valley, New York, offering custom designs and installation of kitchens, bathrooms, and home renovations. A new kitchen in 7days.com.
And we're back with Dr. Paul Husson. It's a very interesting show. Anything you ever wanted to know about urology, men's and women's, there'll be no distinction made. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Mike in Wilbraham, where everybody owns a pig. Okay, Mike, you're on.
Hello, Doctor. Hello, Alan. How are you guys doing today?
Good, good.
I'm wondering if your call screener had a little trouble spelling pheochromocytoma, and I'm wondering if you had any experience in removing them.
Okay, so pheochromocytoma is a particular type of tumor in the adrenal gland, and the adrenal glands sit right above the kidneys and are responsible for adrenaline and then other steroids that the body needs, of course. Pheochromocytomas are rare, thankfully, in that they are sometimes quite serious. They have an overproduction of the adrenaline and things like that. So, as at my hospital at Nathan Lowe Tower, I have not seen one because it has been so rare. But at Albany, where I trained with Dr. Fisher and Dr. Kaufman, Dr. Meehan, et cetera, we have dealt with them. It's complicated. You need to have a good anesthetic team ready for the shifts that you can see when these tumors are manipulated.
What does that mean?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I have von Hippel-Lindau syndrome, so I've had four of them removed bilaterally.
Wow.
Plus other things, but we don't need to get into that. Some are neurological and some are others. But
right.
My main question was, you were talking about Botox for bladder spasms?
Well, so specifically, Botox has been used for refractory incontinence. So if you have, bladder overactivity, meaning that you know, your bladder is squeezing when your mind is telling it not to squeeze, and medications have failed in that it's, you know, not doing enough and you're still having terrible urgency or wetness, Botox can be used to help increase bladder capacity and help to decrease the urgency with that.
And how long has that been around?
Well, again, I mean, Botox has been used in, you know,
on people's lips. I think I can think of one prominent politician who can't move her head anymore.
Yeah. Right, so it's been around for a long time.
Well, why I was asking about that is I'm a caregiver for an 89-year-old gentleman who is now on a Foley full time.
Sure.
He has trouble emptying his bladder.
Right.
They did all the tests. They pumped his bladder full, and then they took to see how long it took to empty and how much it did, and mm-hmm. some of the other tests that they do. But they determined that the only course of action was to have him have a full time catheter. And at 89, he's having a little trouble with it.
Yeah, I mean, catheters.
Okay, Mike, hold on.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, a catheter is, unfortunately, can be pretty irritating, and especially again, I don't know the details otherwise, as far as the patient, the person you're taking care of as well. But, if you don't like having it, it can be pretty cumbersome.
And it could be infectious.
Right. So, chronic catheterization that you have can lead to infections as well. So, but you actually bring up a good point in that incontinence is not a standard thing. There can be a few reasons why people have incontinence. And if you're telling me that this gentleman can't empty his bladder well, then he would most likely have something that we would term overflow incontinence, and that the pressure is getting so great that it's being pushed out the urethra instead of just being held in by the bladder. If his local urologist has determined that he needs a catheter, that's because the bladder is not emptying appropriately. So you need to have it emptied.
The muscles that empty the bladder are atrophied.
Right.
Or they're just not. He just can't do it anymore on his own.
Right. And again, to make that clear, Botox wouldn't be a treatment for this gentleman, because that would be more for someone that the muscle was overactive, not underactive.
Hey, Mike, gotta let you go. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you very much.
Right. You're welcome.
Let's go to Mike in Montour. Oh, Montague. Okay. Mike in, excuse me, this is all wrong. Robert in Montague. Okay. Robert, you're on.
Yeah. Hi. I was just wondering if I've heard over the years that if people had kidney stones, that if they drank more water or juices, especially cranberry juice, and also apple cider vinegar. Are any of those things good for any of these problems that these people are having?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Robert. Again, your question has a lot of important things that I'm glad you're bringing up so I can talk about them. Very, very commonly, people talk about cranberry being good for urinary health, and it's kind of this, panacea almost. The issue is, though, especially with kidney stones, and again, kidney stones are made up of a few different things, but the most common kidney stones are what we call calcium oxalate. And the reason why I even use the fancy term there is that cranberry juice can have oxalate in it. So if you are a person that makes calcium oxalate stones, if you were my patient, I would be much, much more happy with you drinking just water, or maybe some water with lemon in it, actually, because that has citrate, which can inhibit the formation of that. So cranberry juice can be helpful for certain people with urinary tract infections, but for kidney stones, that's not something that I recommend at all. But water is the biggest thing.
What about the apple cider vinegar?
The apple cider vinegar, that works with trying to change the acidity of the urine. And again, that's the important thing to keep in mind there, is that's going to depend upon which kind of stones you're making. So there's also stones that are called uric acid stones, which occur in acidified urine. So by doing that, the idea is to change that. I don't personally prescribe apple cider vinegar or things like that. It's mostly just lots of hydration, and if you're appropriate, I'll try to prescribe potassium citrate, which is a pill or a powder you can take that can help change the acid level of the urine.
Thanks, Robert. Okay. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Let's go to Gary in Amsterdam. Gary, you're on.
Hello.
Hello, you're on.
Thank you. I recently, within the last 2 weeks, saw my primary care physician, had my digital exam regarding to the prostate.
Sure.
Right side was quite enlarged, left side is normal, mm-hmm. and no nodules. But he did recommend that I see a urologist quite promptly.
Okay.
And, asked me if I get up frequently at night, and I rarely have to make a bathroom trip.
Right. Well, that's good. So again, thanks for the question.
Good and lucky.
Yeah, it's nice. It's so again, your question also brings up another important point that we were just talking about a couple minutes ago. An enlarged prostate on a rectal examination doesn't necessarily correlate with voiding dysfunction or, you know, getting up in the middle of the night, slow stream, et cetera. The rectal examination is primarily to screen for prostate cancer. And I'm glad to hear that you didn't have any nodularity or firmness to the prostate, but asymmetry, having one side larger than the other, can be a concerning finding. So I would echo what your primary care has suggested, and then I would recommend getting a rectal examination by a urologist to see whether or not a biopsy would be appropriate.
How do we train doctors to do these rectals?
Well, again, it's at the risk of sounding flippant. I mean, it has to be hands-on. It's one of these things that's quite subjective.
Well, hands in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. it's subjective. Yeah. And as you are, when you're a medical student, if patients are so gracious enough to let you do an exam as well as the urologist that you're with, you can get an idea of what you're feeling, and then you ask the urologist that you're training with, is this what I'm feeling, and that kind of thing. And then really over a period of years, you get to gain an appreciation of what's abnormal and what's not abnormal.
Can you x-ray this stuff?
Well, right. So traditionally, that's been a big problem with prostate cancer screening, is that we don't necessarily have great imaging modalities to determine whether or not a prostate is cancerous or not. Now, that being said, recent advances with MRI technology being fused with the ultrasound and biopsies are making great strides in reducing the amount of false negatives of biopsies and increasing the sensitivity of the biopsy itself. So that's the long answer. The short answer is an ultrasound or an MRI CAT scan, unfortunately, that's not good enough yet. We still need to do a biopsy.
Gary, thank you.
Well, quick question. Okay. Doctor brought up the asymmetrical prostate. What can that signify?
Well, again, it may just be the way that your genetics are, that your prostate is growing in that direction. But the thing to rule out would be a tumor that's underneath the capsule of prostate that you necessarily couldn't feel with just the finger.
How old are you, Gary?
I am 56.
That's a good question. Thank you. And then do you have a PSA? Do you have the blood test?
It was not ordered for my last set of blood work, so I have blood work to be drawn 2 days before I see the urologist.
Okay. Yeah, all that's important information. And then, of course, family history, if you do have that, that's important information to tell your urologist as well.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you. Yeah. Happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas.
Thanks. Let's go 1-800-348-2551. Two people on the phone, three free phones. You want to get in, now's a great time to do it. 1-800-348-2551. Gail in Newport, New York. Okay, Gail, you're on.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
I appreciate this opportunity. I'm a 73-year-old woman. I just turned 73. And from the years 2008 through 2011, I had a lot of extreme stress in my personal life. Mm-hmm. And I started with incontinence, and I saw a urologist.
Okay.
And he determined that it was both kinds of incontinence.
Right.
But this was way back then, and okay, he didn't feel it would be of good advantage to operate. What I'm wondering now is, I'm 73, it's 3 years later, I have such incontinence, and even my rectal muscles are so weak that I fear going out in the event I'm going to have a big accident.
Sure.
And be really embarrassed.
Sure.
And the thing is, I'm calling about, is there any possibility, an appliance or some kind of surgical procedure that could eliminate this in a, like a cystocele, what is it, rectocele?
Yep. Yep.
That wouldn't be too invasive, that I could handle that, because I don't have a lot of stress in my life right now, and I really don't want to live the next, if I live another 10 years, I don't want to live it like that.
Of course, of course. So again, your question brings up a lot of important topics. And again, you said that, you know, your auto said that you had both kinds of incontinence. And just for everyone listening, in general, for women, you know, we'll call that mixed incontinence. So there's stress incontinence, which is very, very common, where you cough and sneeze, or that you lift something heavy and you'll lose urine and that way. And that can be associated with prolapse, like you're describing, or even not, it doesn't have to be. And then urge incontinence, which again is the overactivity. And again, it's important that you know that if you have both of those, because the treatment for those types of incontinences are different, right? So for urge incontinence and overactivity, it's usually, you know, medical, or again, like the Botox we talked about earlier. But with the stress incontinence, it ends up being more of a mechanical problem, and that you would need to have a repair of the prolapse surgically, or a sling placed in the underneath the urethra. And to your point where you asked about an appliance. And certainly I have many patients who surgery may not be the best option for because recovery may be tough. So I have many patients that are using pessary. And basically what that is just a small appliance that I can help fit or your urologist could help fit in the office. And that would basically reduce the prolapse and hopefully treat the stress incontinence as well.
Now, is that that's placed in the vagina, right? But for how long?
Well, again, so it would need some kind of maintenance. So you would have to be able to take care of it, take it out, wash with soap and water, things like that. But again, that one of the advantages is that you don't have to go through a larger procedure. But the disadvantage would be that, you know, some patients might think that it would be inconvenient to have to take care of it. If you left it in, it would cause a problem.
Well, I'm not sure. What is that? Could you spell the name of it, please?
Sure. It's P-E-S-S-A-R-Y. If you look it up online, you'll see there's a lot of different types. But
and they've been around for a long time, haven't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, pessaries have been around for thousands of years.
Were they used to prevent pregnancy or not, ever?
You know, I honestly don't. I don't know.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. Gail, thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Lisa in Saratoga. Lisa, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Huston. Thanks for taking the call. Hi,
of
Alan.
Course.
I just have a question. I had a nephrectomy when I was 4 months old, and I'm now 56 years old. And for the first, 6 years of my life, I had IVPs every 6 months, a cysto at once a year. And I think that was probably overkill, but they didn't know at the time. They were surprised I actually lived as long as I have.
Okay.
I haven't been to a urologist in a long time. And I guess when I heard the guy call about, you know, the adrenal gland, since I've only lived through this long with only one, and I don't, you know, I've had, you know, the typical urinary tract infections, which I am always on top of.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, could you get a little closer to the phone?
I can. I'm on my cell phone. I apologize for that.
Okay, that's fine.
So I just wondered if there's anything, if I should take a trip back just to get checked, just to see how the old kidney is doing. I know it's bigger than average because it's been all by itself all these years. But.
Right. Yeah. I mean, what you described, I mean, the one kidney has basically taken up the slack and gotten larger to deal with all of the functions that your kidneys should perform for you. But I would say, I mean, it sounds like your history is relatively complex, so it might not be a bad idea, but you may just start with your primary care to get some simple blood work, which would show that what your renal function is in general. You know, as far as, you know, me, you know, dealing with kidney stones and things like that, if I have a patient with one kidney, that gets to be more serious, because if your one kidney gets obstructed with the kidney stone, well, then you're not going to make any urine at all. So it's very serious. Hopefully you don't have that history.
No, I have not had, knock on wood, a kidney stone.
Lisa, a lot of people behind you. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye. Let's go to Ellie in Niskayuna. Ellie, you're on.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I have a cyst on my kidney, and it's symptomatic. I have a lot of pain, and I'm told I have an infection. It's 2 centimeters by 2 centimeters by 2 centimeters, and I'm wondering what the treatment would be.
Okay. Well, Ellie, thanks for the question. Renal cysts are, I guess let me back up. So renal cysts, for everyone listening, are just fluid-filled parts of the kidney that are often found incidentally on imaging, like CAT scans, ultrasounds, when someone does present with pain. And I guess, Ellie, let me ask you a couple more questions about the discomfort you're having. What kind of pain are you having?
Well, it aches sometimes, and then at intervals of about maybe 4 to 7 days, I get a feeling in my back like there's a knife being shoved in, and I have to use narcotic painkillers.
Do you have any other medical history at all?
No, not with my kidneys, no.
Well, right, but I mean, do you have any chronic back issues or problems with your spine at all?
Yes, I've had 2 laparoscopies about 15 years ago.
Okay. I mean, well, the reason why
I don't mean laparoscopies. I don't mean that. I mean on my spine.
Right.
Laminectomies, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fair enough. And the reason why I asked those kind of questions is that the size of the cyst that you relayed to me, being, you know, 2 centimeters, usually for a renal cyst, a simple renal cyst to be symptomatic, it would need to be quite large. Of course, there are other characteristics of the cyst that I would need to know as far as whether or not this was something to be concerned about. There are 4 different classifications of renal cysts, with the most simple being 1 or 2, and those are in general benign. Of course, if they're complex, that's a whole other story. But if you haven't seen a urologist yet, I would make a trip to see one and make sure to bring the imaging so they can tell you what type of cyst you have and whether or not this could be causing your pain. There's a possibility that this was not the reason why you're having the pain.
Great. Thank you so much, Doctor. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ellie. We'll take a short break, and then we'll come back for Judy, Claire, and Mark, among others. That will leave 2 free phones. If you want to check in, do it now, 1-800-348-2551.
Support comes from Midwives of the Hudson Valley and Capital Region, offering women's health care, maternity care, and home birth services throughout the Hudson Valley and Capital Regions. Midwives support WAMC.com. Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany, serving hibachi dinners, sushi, sashimi, curry soups, Thai, and entrees, offering daily specials, 518-432-0358. Nathan Latower Hospital, Gloversville, New York, less than 50 minutes from the Capital District, offering minimally invasive procedures for back pain with Dr. Ja'an Shen, NLH.org. Mount St. Mary College, Newburgh, a day-long admissions event for students interested in transferring college credits towards a bachelor's or master's degree. Instant decision available for students with transcripts Wednesday, January 6th from 10 to 6, msmc.edu. And the Wild Center, Tupper Lake, New York, open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 10 to 5, where the wild world of the Adirondacks opens before your eyes, wildcenter.org.
And we are back with Dr. Paul Husson, and phones have been busy. There are 2 free phones right now, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Judy in Middletown. Hi, Judy. We'd love to hear from Middletown. Go ahead.
Hi. I was going to ask a question about surgery, but when I got finished with the screener, I tuned in and heard you talking about surgery. So I'm going to change my question a little bit.
Sure.
I'm 59 years old, and I've suffered from incontinence for at least 30 years.
Okay.
I've been through at least 6 medications, which were ineffective.
Well, Judy, are you having incontinence when you cough and sneeze, or is it overactivity or urgency?
I don't think I can call it urgency because I don't necessarily get any signals. It's just flowing.
Sure, okay.
all the time. I've even tried Kegels. I even bought a Kegel Master.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is that a training of the muscles? Is
exactly. That yeah, it yes, trains sure. the pelvic yeah. muscles, exactly.
Right, and I haven't found anything effective. Somebody had suggested to me that a sling might be effective, but since you already talked about a sling, I'll ask a little bit more about Botox. How long does the effect last? And is it really expensive?
Well, what I would say first is that, again, I just want to talk back to your point as far as the sling. Now, again, a sling procedure is great for stress incontinence. If there's a degree of urgency or overactivity, that might not be the best option, at least by itself. So in your case specifically, have you ever had a specialized test called urodynamics?
I have had some tests. I don't remember the name of it.
Well, because
the
reason why I bring that up is that I would want to get a more detailed look at your bladder as far as, you know, how large, what is your capacity, how much urine can you hold, what is the pressure when you do have a contraction. All these things are important because that's going to really detail what type of procedure would be useful for you. So when you talk about things like Botox for overactivity, there's actually another technique and another device called an InterStim. And this is basically, the simple way to put it is basically a pacemaker for the bladder. So sometimes if you have an overactivity of the bladder reflex, this can be really helpful as well. And I've had great results with this procedure as well. If you're the type of person in your bladder would be appropriate for it. But again, that's where you'd want to have that urodynamics to kind of help determine whether that'd be useful for you. And then to the last point, as far as expense, you know, the Botox injections in the InterStim are approved for, you know, with the fancy term is idiopathic, but basically incontinence, urgency incontinence that we don't have a other neurologic diagnosis for.
Idiopathic means we don't know.
Right, exactly right. And, you know, depending on that, most insurance companies will not give you a hard time as far as covering that. Now, that being said, of course, you know, there are times where that becomes more of an issue. That, but then my job as your treating urologist or whoever your urologist is, you could potentially appeal that. But that might take some bit of time.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, you're
very
welcome. Judy. 1-800-348-2551, two free phones. We'll go to Claire in Kingston. Claire, you're on.
Thank you. How much does it change your PSA results if you ride an exercise bicycle the day before the test?
Uh-oh.
So great question.
I certainly do. Yeah.
So again, that goes more to the prostate. Again, it produces a lot of things before the ejaculate, for the ejaculate, things like that. But the PSA is one of them, right? So manipulation of the prostate, does that falsely elevate your PSA is kind of what I think your question's getting at. And if you have a good deal of pressure on the prostate, theoretically, that is possible to elevate it a little bit. The issue with that is if the person is someone that's an avid bike rider and then is always using that, then that PSA would be his baseline, basically, and that you could look at that. Again, other people think that having sexual intercourse within a day or two of having the PSA can falsely elevate it as well.
Can it?
Well, sometimes. But again, the data is not terribly strong to say that that's always going to make it go up and things like that.
Well, now, Judy, Claire, I have to say that even though I'm not the doctor here, I have ridden a bike, an exercise bike, for an hour every single day of the year for at least the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. And my PSAs are close to zero. So, I think that if this hypothesis is right, that I probably have a negative, a negative.
So when he goes to get to talk to his doctor about the results, he should mention that just in case.
Why
it
not?
Is higher.
He could, but again, I mean, just like Alan just said, it doesn't necessarily correlate. Again, it's useful information, but it's not necessarily going to change management. Depending.
Okay,
Claire,
great. Thank you so much for your
call.
Answer.
You're welcome.
Yeah, great. Thanks,
bye-bye.
Claire. All right. Let's go to Mark in Rosendale. Mark, you're on.
Hi.
Hey.
Alan, thank you, and Doc, thank you. I want to pose a quick three-part question, and I'll hang up and listen.
No, don't do that.
Hang
we
up.
May want to ask you another question. Go ahead.
Okay. I was diagnosed with BPH, and I believe they said it was a grape size.
Okay.
Stop for a second. BPH is?
BPH, benign prostatic hyperplasia, hypertrophy, just enlarged prostate.
Okay, go ahead, Mark.
And the, I'm wondering, is grape size, I don't recall, is that like, what's normal? Is pea size normal?
No, when you said grape, I kind of smiled a little bit. Usually people talk about it being the size of a walnut. And then, again, in extreme cases, you can get it, you know.
You mean the whole prostate?
Yes, the whole prostate.
Yeah.
So I guess it depends on what kind of grapes you're eating. But
I was going to say there are big grapes and little grapes.
Yeah. Pea would, definitely
how
not.
How about a cranberry?
All too small. I would say that, walnut probably is the smallest you're going to go. And then people get orange size. And then extreme cases, grapefruit. In any case, as far as BPH, what type of symptoms are you having?
Well, pretty much asymptomatic except for weakened flow.
Okay.
And how often should a prostate exam follow-up be done?
Well, again, and so prostate exams in the rectal exam, like we talked about earlier, the primary function is for prostate cancer screening. The size of your prostate under rectal examination doesn't necessarily correlate with voiding symptoms like weakened stream, intermittency, hesitancy, getting up in the middle of the night, things like that. Now, again, and then prostate cancer screening, as you may be aware of, is relatively controversial recently, as you know, some members of the medical community don't think that it's very useful. Now, again, obviously, I'm biased. I'm a urologist, and the American
me too.
Yeah, the American Urological Association recommends that gentlemen between the age of 55 and 70 be screened at least once a year.
And after 70?
Well, after 70, you have to have a discussion with the patient and talk about whether or not you think that screening would be useful for you, and that would it, you know, improve your quality of life, extend your life. And again, these are very personal, very...
Alan speaking.
Right.
You find prostate cancer in me, I want it out.
Right, exactly right. And that's the thing. So the issue, and what we'll see going forward, is whether or not most insurance companies will pay for screening, depending on that. The whole idea statistically...
What, they want us to die?
Well, not necessarily that, but just that, you know, they... The main idea is that we want to avoid over-treatment. So if, you know, you have... other medical problems that are very severe, the idea on that side of the fence would be, why put you through any of the testing or screening, because any kind of treatment may not really be helpful for you. But again, as you can imagine, you know, you can probably hear from my voice here, it gets to be very complicated, and very, in my opinion, it should be, you know, one patient to one urologist at that time talking about that specific case. And it's tough to do, it's tough to practice medicine with that, with a population kind of, you know, background on that.
What else you got, Mark?
Well, just to comment on that, I'm retired now, but when I used to work, my insurance company paid me money every year to get a prostate.
Interesting.
A PSA.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, when I gave them proof of PSA, they sent me $75.
Is that right? Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, but that was good insurance.
And how old were you? How old were you at the time?
In my 50s.
Right. Well, that's prime time when you should be being screened, for sure.
Yeah. Hey, Mark.
My last question, what herbal drinks are good? I've heard sawgrass is good.
Well, so, yes. So as far as herbal remedies for BPH or enlarged prostate, there's one that's been used for many, many years called saw palmetto. Right. And I've had patients...
S-A-W?
Yes, S-A-W, yep. And I've seen patients that have done very well on this long-term. The issue with that, and I would just caution anyone listening and you as well, is that with a lot of the herbal supplements, there's not much regulation. So you can buy a pill that may be, you know, quite expensive, and there's no real way to know exactly how much active ingredient is there. But, you know, that being said, for patients that are looking for any way to not use a pharmaceutical type of medication, that is an option.
Well, but that seems a little nutty to me. I'm sorry for that. Why would anybody? Pharmaceuticals are at least tested by the FDA. The other stuff isn't.
Well, and this,
there's
this
a lot
could
of
be
side effects with the pharmaceuticals.
Well, you can have side effects with anything.
Generalization.
Well, yeah. Right, but again, this we could have a whole hour talk about just this. You know, and it there's very. It gets very emotional as well, because there's lots of ins and outs as far as, you know, quote unquote, who to trust. But at least, obviously, again, I'm biased. I'm a urologist. I like the fact that the FDA, you know, approves medications and goes over all that. There's a lot of rigorous testing for all
that. And they're still wrong later on.
Well, exactly. So it's tough. So I would just caution anyone to use, if they're using herbals, if they're working for you, great. But just, you know, keep it in mind that as far as the details, they're not necessarily, the bottle might not be necessarily correct. It may be, but.
Okay, thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank
you. Now we are in a unique situation. Huh, why is that? Yeah, okay. We are in a unique situation now of having one phone. I guess it's Harvey from Albany. I think that's who it is. Harry from Albany is on the phone, and that leaves four free phones, folks. 1-800-348-2551. Welcome, Harry.
Thank you, gentlemen. Good afternoon.
Hi.
I'm 68 years old. I recently had a PSA blood test in the last 2 weeks that came out with about a 5.5.
Okay.
I have had a total proctocolectomy 25 years ago.
Okay.
And I take 6 milligrams of terazosin twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
I get up once during the night, sometimes two times, depending on how much I had to drink in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is this, without regard to cost and without regard to managed care decision, what are my options for a permanent solution to a prostate issue?
Well, so I hear in the question, almost two different things. The first thing you said is your PSA is elevated. So 5.5 is elevated. Do you know what your PSA was prior to this?
I think it was probably a little bit lower.
Okay.
I've noticed that the amount of perazosin that I've been taking has slowly, over the last few years, been increasing.
Sure, sure.
And I think its effectiveness is marginal.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm looking at, I would like to pursue with a urologist, you know, a long-term solution to this issue.
Well, right. So, I mean, I would say that, now, again, you gave me the information with your surgical history. Thank you for that. Do you have a rectum, or is that...
I do not. I had a total proctoplasty.
Right.
So
that would make it a little bit more complicated, because, I mean, one of the things that I would suggest is that you consider a prostate biopsy. And for you, you wouldn't have it the traditional way that most people do these days, but you still could get what's called a perineal prostate biopsy, because you'd want to make sure before you go to any other treatment, as far as your obstruction goes, you'd want to make sure that you're not missing, prostate cancer, of course.
Yes.
So as far as seeing a urologist, I mean, that would be one of the first things I would imagine that would be addressed. And then if you did have prostate cancer, then you would need to consider having the prostate removed. And that may have the nice secondary side effect of taking it away from being in front of your bladder, which may, obviously help your obstructive symptoms.
Right.
If you didn't have prostate cancer, of course, there are other things that can be done, including other medications and even smaller surgical procedures to make it easier for your bladder to empty.
Okay. Outstanding. Thank you so much. Okay. I actually have an appointment with a urologist on Friday, and I think I have great information to have that conversation.
Great. Thanks.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Thank
you. Okay, let's go to Brian in Clifton Park. Brian, you're on.
Wonderful. Thank you for taking the call. My question is, I'm going to be 49 years old, and I have a wonderful relationship with my physician.
Mm-hmm.
And however, he does not, the old and very uncomfortable tests
mm-hmm.
that were done.
Sure.
He doesn't do.
Okay.
And which I'm thankful for, but I want to make sure at 48, going to be 49, that I'm not missing a test or missing a screening or missing something that I should be missing.
Right.
Or should be getting, I'm sorry.
Sure. Now, again, so that brings up a good point as far as, again, prostate cancer screening in general, as far as, it talks to the controversy once again for it. Now, there are those in the urologic community that believe that we should be getting PSA in guys even in their early 30s as kind of a baseline to see whether or not they're going to be at risk higher later on. So there's a wide spectrum of people that are very aggressive about screening and people that are very relaxed about it. Now, again, though, it comes down to the patient. If you were to come into my office and you'd say, listen, I'm going to be 49. I'm concerned about this. Then again, if we had a nice conversation about the risks and benefits of screening and what that means, and you wish to have it done, then I would accommodate that. Now, again, some people would say that you quote unquote don't need it. Well, again, that depends on what your goals are.
Okay.
So and if you have a good rapport with your primary care provider, which it sounds like you do, again, just have a nice conversation saying, listen, I am concerned about this. And as things go, again, take it with a grain of salt, me being who I am, but a rectal
sure.
exam and a PSA is not terribly bad as far as screening goes.
And neither of them are perfect.
Right, of course, but it's kind of
okay.
the best we have at this point. So
yeah.
I would say if you're concerned, if there's family history that's positive, or even if there's not, but if you're concerned, it's reasonable.
Brian, thank you for your call. Appreciate
thank you.
It very much. Right, let's go to Sean in Albany. Sean in Albany, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Husson. Just wondering, I'm getting up there close to 40. We're talking a little bit about people older than 40.
What do you mean you're getting up there?
So Sean, thanks for calling. As far as prostate cancer screening, again, now you're even younger than the last gentleman. At your age, if there's no other family history, again, I may talk to you about how that's very unlikely in your age group. But again, if you were anxious about it and you were very concerned, then I would go ahead and accommodate you for that.
Great.
Okay.
Thanks, Sean.
Thanks a lot. Okay. We're going to very quickly, because we're running out of time, we go to Catherine in Troy. Okay. Catherine, ask your question.
Hi there. Interstitial cystitis. Can you talk about it and how you would treat it?
Okay. Well, Catherine, I wish you had called earlier in the hour, because this could be a very long answer.
Considering you have about a half a minute to
right.
do it.
Right. So I'm sorry. So I will say this. So interstitial cystitis, for everyone listening, is basically a pelvic, painful pelvic syndrome. And it's more a diagnosis of exclusion, in that you have to rule out other bad things that could be causing it. So again, the short answer for this, it does require a decent amount of testing, and there are medications and there are behavioral techniques that can help. But again, this is something that is done in close concert with a urologist and maybe even a pain management specialist.
Okay, thank you, Catherine. Let's go to Linda in Dalton. Linda, this will be the last call. What do you got?
Hi. I have had recurrent UTIs for about 10 years plus stress leakage and control. And I've been seeing a urologist, and for the UTIs, he's been putting me on nitrofurantoin. But I'm really tired of the recurrent UTIs, and I'd like to know if there's something I can do about that.
Okay, well, thank you for the question, Linda. And so this is a very common problem, people that get recurrent UTIs, and there are some...
Again,
I am 73, and I've had a hysterectomy. So.
Okay, sure. And a UTI, once again, is?
I'm sorry, UTI is a urinary tract infection, most commonly referring to a bladder infection, cystitis. And this can be very difficult, especially as you do get a little bit older. But the mainstays for me are making sure you're adequately hydrated, making sure that you're not having any concomitant constipation or diarrhea, and that you don't have any stone disease. But it can be difficult, and I wish you luck.
And Linda, I wish we had more time, but we don't. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it very much. Yeah. Okay, we are out of time. My apologies to no one, because nobody's up there, who were left on the line. I want to thank Dr. Paul Husson for doing a great job with us today. You really were good. Support for Medical Monday comes from Toprosyn, creams designed to heal muscle aches, back, neck, and shoulder pain, injuries, carpal tunnel, and more. Toprosyn.com. Thanks to our wonderful engineer, the man in the hat, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell for answering the phone. She's an Esquire, you know. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. She's in charge today. Ian's gone. I'm Alan Shartok. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at wamc.org/VoxPop. Stay tuned now for a little bit of theme music and then a nice broadcast of the news.